Welcome to the Ripple Effect Martial Arts Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast. We are here with two very special guests today. They are Rachel Macy and Greg Macy, also known as Master Macy and Mrs. Master Macy. They are the founders of Ripple Effect Martial Arts in Colorado and Florida. And thank you so much for making the time.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to talk with us. This is exciting. I know we've go way back, Mr. Brady, and it's just really a pleasure. And we're always excited to just chat with you.
Thank you. Well, yeah, we have a little fireside chat here. I was looking at pictures last night from July of 2013, and that's when the first Ripple Effect Martial Arts School opened in Fort Collins, Colorado. And Master Macy, you were standing outside, and it's almost unrecognizable. The mats were almost all laid out. There was a lot of iron and dust and concrete going on. And what I think a lot of people want to know about is origin stories. Where did this come from?
Well, you know, and it's funny that you bring up the very beginning, because it was just like any business endeavors, it's scary. There's a lot of, you know, fear that goes into starting something, whether or not people are going to come. And, you know, at the time when we were looking at the Fort Collins School and we had just finished the build out, it looked monstrous. You know, you would walk in there and the thought that I had was, how are we going to fill this place? Like, how are we going to have this many students to be able to make this space worth it? And so, you know, when we had that first class, we had the Wades in the first class, and it was just, you know, two or three, and that feeling was like pretty real, because it was, just an emptiness. And there was, you know, that picture you're probably referring to, there's nothing on the walls. It's just a blue blank slate. You know, I think that's like any business though, you start to put things together slowly. And, you know, before we knew it, we had a full white belt class. We had 30 or 40 white belts in one class. Because we didn't have any other belts but white belts, we had to split it up and actually have two or three white belt classes per day, because we grew so fast. We had, you know, hundreds of people within a matter of like 6-9 months. We were at like 150, 200 students. So it was just fun to reflect back and go, wow, geez, you know, this is something. And now, you know, you ask the staff there and they're like, well, can we blow out the walls and, you know, take over Horizon and make this school bigger, because we're just too crammed in here. So it's just fun to see it grow like that.
Mrs. Master Macy, your origin story is a little different, right? You grew up with parents who were martial artists.
Very different. Yeah. So we started training, actually my mom started training when she was in college. For as long as I can remember, I was born in California. Our instructor there was Master DeBaca. And I remember all of my older sisters, my mom and my dad all trained. And I remember begging them to go to karate class, like I'm genuinely begging them at like 3 years old, and then being like, no, not yet, not yet. And my mom started one of the first Tigers and Dragons or Little Ripples programs for younger kids so that I could start training when I turned four. So as soon as I turned 4 years old, I was on the mats right away and just kind of grew up helping teach. Even at 4 years old, I would help, you know, with warm-ups and things like that, and just loved teaching and loved martial arts. And that's something that has never wavered. Kind of how I got into this role is a little bit different though. So, you know, I grew up in the school. I was a head instructor when I was in high school, and then a little bit in college. I went to college I got my degree in business management, and then started a wedding planning company when I was in school and thought I wanted to do. And so we've heard some of our junior instructors and teenagers say this, but they want a real job, right? They want a real job, not teaching martial arts. It's something you've done since you were a little kid, and you have this idea that this isn't potentially a career. And so, no, I did not want to run my mom's school, and I wanted to do my own thing and grow my own business. So I did that for several years and would jump in and teach a class any opportunity I could. I would train as consistently as I could while running this other company. And after a few years, I remember there was a day at Middleburg Martial Arts, there was kind of a little crisis and she really needed some emergency help. So she called me and she's like, can you please just come in and help me for a couple of days? I was like, yeah, absolutely. When I was in there, there were so many things that just kind of like flooded me with realization of how much I missed teaching and working with the kids. And just in those couple days, seeing some of the kids who had grown that I was teaching a couple of years before and that I maybe taught their very first class, and seeing the growth and the progress that they made just brought back a lot of the intrinsic rewards, I think, that we get out of teaching and being a part of martial arts and being a part of something that really helps people to become the best versions of themselves. And so from there, kind of shifted gears and helped my mom run Middleburg Martial Arts for about 10 years. We ran it together, and then always had the goal of opening multiple schools. And that's actually kind of how we met. So we met because I wanted some advice. He had three schools in Colorado, and I had a lot of, you know, respect for him and knew a lot about the Ripple Effect schools, and just wanted some feedback and some tips before we launched our Fleming Island location, because that was kind of in the works and in the plan at that point. And yeah, here we are.
Heard, I have a 17-year-old now, almost, and the teachers that were back in kindergarten, second grade, fifth grade, they look, Mrs. Mastamisi, saying what you just said, just going, wow, I remember 10 years ago, and look at where you are now. And what an amazing thing to be able to do. It is a rarity. So people who are enrolling or thinking about enrolling their kids in a martial arts, a black belt program, they go, well, what do you do? Do you become the owner of a school? Do you become a head instructor? Maybe, but that's a rarity, really, right? It's something that broadens your prospects in life in general. Would you say that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think the key piece that almost every instructor has in common is obviously the passion for teaching, passion for working with kids and changing lives, but ultimately that never leaves them. You know, whether or not they go on to find a career in, you know, business, or they go on, they still will always have that innate passion for helping other people. And I think that's really the beauty of the program and what we do as martial artists is we teach these character lessons, and most everybody develops the sense of leadership, and we call it servant leadership. And we actually teach that premise of being a servant is really the key here. And so as they go on and they graduate and they get a career, if you talk to most of the instructors, especially, they always have this longing for going back and helping. And that's really what led me back into opening a karate school, was that longing. I, you know, couldn't get rid of it. I couldn't shake it, you know, and it was there all the time. And so for me to ignore that was actually kind of almost self-destructive. Like it was a piece that I really had to like satisfy. And, you know, when you talk to a lot of the instructors, that is that kind of like they have those longings, and most of them end up coming back in some capacity. It's kind of funny, is, you know, we have so many instructors that leave and they go on and they do college and they, you know, get done with college and they might start a career or something, but in some form or fashion, they always return. And it's kind of funny to see them return because they have that, again, longing to kind of help or be back or be in some capacity. So
it is amazing. I saw a really cool video of a leadership nomination recently. And this girl is a gold belt and small, you know, an elementary age child. And the enthusiasm is so great. And I think I think some people may go, well, a child is a leader. How does that work? And the nomination was all about this child wanted to help, but want to help in a class, help another student who was having trouble. And that seems like the spark, right? How in the schools do you see that or encourage that spark to want to help even when you don't necessarily know how?
Well, I think every kid has it. And it's not, people think, well, leaders are a dime a dozen. It's really, leaders really are developed, but ultimately it starts with that spark from wanting to help. And I can't say that every kid is wanting to be a helper, but I would say 99% of every kid out there really has this nature of helping other people. And what we have to do is kind of cultivate that. We need to uncover it, and we need to foster it and give and empower them. You know, a lot of kids, a lot of parents, they do have that kind of premise or notion of that, I can't, you know, imagine my kid being a leader out there and instructing other kids. In fact, I was just at the Middleburg school this last week, and I was teaching and had one of the kids come out there, and this young gentleman has autism. And, you know, for me as an instructor, we don't label, we don't, you know, we treat and help every kid the same capacity. And he was there to help, and he really had never been pushed into that role. And I immediately grabbed him and put him in charge of two other kids. And he was leading these two other kids. And you wouldn't know that he had autism by the way he was helping and wanting to get out there, because that overpowered everything. You know, his willingness to help these other kids overpowered everything. And so his mom afterwards, in fact, came up to me and goes, "I didn't know he had it in him. I'd never seen him lead." You know, it was amazing to see. So she was kind of blown away that he was put in that capacity, but he rose to the challenge. And I think that's really what it is when we put people and empower people into these roles, they rise to the challenge. And our job as instructors is really to empower them, guide them, but, you know, ultimately give them the opportunity. That's just, everybody just needs a shot at leading.
Well, I think also, every one of us, every person is different, right? We all have different strengths. We have different weaknesses. We have different things that are easy for us and things that we struggle with. And that's one of the things that I find most amazing about martial arts is everybody's growth journey is different. My growth is based on who I was yesterday and who I'm going to be tomorrow, not the person next to me or anything, you know, everyone else in the room. But leadership is a big piece of that. So one kid might come into the school and be a natural born leader, right? Just be like jumping in, ready to help people in every direction. And maybe the biggest thing that our instructors are cultivating with them is some humility or some, you know, something along those lines. And then another kid walks in and they need help with their confidence, or an adult comes in and they need some guidance with their leadership in a different capacity. And I think that's the other piece, you know, like Master Macy said, everyone has that in them. Every single one of our students, by the time they get to black belt, is a leader. They can teach a class. They can lead a demonstration. You put them in front of any group of people and say, "Get them to do this." And they're like, "Yes, ma'am." And they'll do it, right? And 90% of those people don't start that way. And our instructors are excellent about finding what each person needs individually and helping them grow in that capacity, so that they are all at the same level at the end of the day. They're all able to achieve and accomplish the same things and have that same quality of leadership, no matter what it was behind the scenes that they worked on over the last, you know, 4 years to get to that point or whatever it might be.
The chance to help, Mrs. Master Macy, you just spoke to that when you were younger and you knew that your mom needed help in the school. And that's a huge challenge. I mean, my mom needed help with the dishes and things, and you know, I stepped up and helped out, but even that can be kind of intimidating. What kind of opportunities do you love seeing in the schools for kids to show respect, to show thankfulness, gratitude?
Well, I think ultimately every instructor is looking for a teachable moment, right? And we sometimes have to create those teachable moments. And so whether it's by challenging them or have them go out of their comfort zone and do something they've never done before, to even doing routine things, and everybody, including the adults in there. In fact, I think the adults probably develop more leadership skills in our program than the kids. And parents sometimes think that's the other way around, because, you know, most of the stuff that we teach isn't taught in elementary school. It's not taught in college. You don't go to a four-year university and really learn a lot of the leadership skills that we develop. And so for an adult to have those teachable moments, a lot of times it is as simple as, like, you put an adult in front of four kids and say, "Okay, teach them how to do this." And a lot of times the adults probably struggle with that a little bit more, because they think, well, I should be able to do this. But it is tricky when you got one kid who, you know, might have a confidence issue, one kid that might have ADD and has learning challenges. And so, you know, for us to uncover those teachable moments is really kind of what makes me thrive. It's not, you know, the other way around. It's not more reactive. It's not like, well, we need to work on this because I see that you aren't very good at this. It's, let's create that teachable moment and then use that to, you know, help their leadership and teach them.
it's helping people push themselves into situations where they're uncomfortable, and then helping them recognize what they just accomplished. And even if that's so tiny, right? Even if that's somebody stepping on the mats for the first time, right? Because that's, for some people, that's the scariest step. Usually for adults, that's the scariest step, is getting on the mats for the first time. Sometimes it's leading a group for the first time. We have a saying or a quote that we reference all the time, which is get uncomfortable being uncomfortable, or get comfortable being uncomfortable, right? And I think that's so true. I think our students look at our school, as all of the schools, as a place that is so nurturing and supportive and loving that they can put themselves out there. They can get up and perform a form in front of 50 people in the school because they know they have that level of support and comfort and guidance, and they feel safe to be able to be uncomfortable and to be vulnerable and to really push themselves. And growth comes from those uncomfortable moments. And I think that's something that our instructors do an amazing job of guiding our students through those and finding those opportunities really well.
What you are talking about, I think, describes very beautifully the board break experience. Something that always, always, always amazes me and moves me emotionally is how intense and chaotic part of it is. I mean, there's splinters flying everywhere, there are yells, but then there's inevitably these moments of quiet and concentration where there's one student who is struggling and you push them. That's not the right word. You encourage isn't the right word. I don't know how to describe it, but the spotlight is on them. They have to accomplish something that is incredibly physically and mentally, emotionally challenging. And I've never seen someone not accomplish it.
You know, for me, that's probably favorite part of my job, right? Is when we get to do these board breaks. There's so much behind the scenes and develop. People think, oh, you just got to be able to teach somebody how. It's not so much the technique. It's not so much like, well, you got to teach them how to do a jump reverse psychic and have a powerful. We all know that the actual act of breaking a board is pretty hard. It's challenging, right? There's a barrier. It can be very challenging. However, I mean, we've proven, you know, six-year-olds can do it. And the thing that excites me is it is mainly being able to change their state. And that's really what the board break is about, is, you know, you're empowering them and you're getting them from this one state of mind and transforming them into this other state of mind. And in that process, yeah, there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of tricks to be able to change their state. But once you've changed their state and you've put them into a powerful state, then they can break through anything. And, you know, that's really what it is about. And so all the little tricks that we use, and a lot of it's stuff that they don't recognize we're doing to change their state. But there's not, in a board break seminar, there's probably what, 10% of us teaching technique and how to break a board. And the rest of it is really changing their state of mind, developing the energy, developing the power, and then ultimately getting them to break through. And then also that self-reflection of, I just accomplished something amazing, and anchoring that to other areas in their lives. And so again, you know, the board break itself is great, but if they don't go walk away from that and have this empowered state and also something to reflect back onto. So when things get tough, you know, when they're going through stuff in their own personal life, or they're challenged with other things, if they can reflect back and go, you know, I know how to change my state. I know how to overcome these obstacles because I'm now a black belt and I've learned how to do that. That's really what it's about for me. And so it's fun and exciting, but I do leave those on an emotional high because I've seen so many people overcome so many obstacles. Mm-hmm.
We had a girl at the last board break who, she broke through two boards and then just started pouring tears. And I was like, what's going on? Right. And she goes, I have so many emotions. Like, that's what she said to me. And it wasn't, you know, she wasn't crying because she was hurt. She wasn't crying because she was feeling defeated, because those are the things you'd expect. But it's because, you know, she broke through a board and she just felt this huge boost of confidence. She felt amazing, on top of the world. Then she went to a harder board and she struggled. So then she went through all of these other feelings of frustration and demotivation and self-doubt and all of these things. And then again, that next moment of success. And that's where things get really intense in martial arts, is, you know, on the way journey through to black belt, It's very easy and exciting in the beginning. I won't say easy. It's not always easy. You're still learning new things and challenging yourself constantly. But it does get to a point where it's really hard. And every person has their own hurdles that they go through. And it might be something going on personally. It might be something going on physically. It might be something you're struggling with in class. Whatever it is, it's different for everybody. And when they learn how to push through and overcome and then accomplish something like black belt, that carries over to every other area of their life. And I think in the board break, you condense a journey like that to a 30-minute, you know, board breaking experience. There's a lot of emotions and reward that they, you know, overcome and things like that in that board break seminar.
That's a great encapsulation of something that has always struck me about the experience of earning a black belt, and that is the emotion. There is maybe a stereotype that martial arts is stoic and it's slapping to attention and push-ups and bowing and silence and things, but there is joy, there's humor, there's sadness and challenging emotions too, and it's extraordinary to experience that as a parent as well as a student. This is getting a little personal, but do either of you, both of you, have experiences like that in your own black belt journey? Do you remember anything powerful?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of moments, and I think every student can reflect, every black belt can reflect back at a pivotal moment of when you maybe were either thinking about quitting, or maybe you challenged on a different level. For me, honestly, it was like really early on. I was a green belt. I was probably about 10 or 11 and maybe 12. And I, you know, my parents were going through a divorce, and it was one of those things where it no longer had its appeal, you know, and it, for a lot of reasons, whether it was, you know, the stuff that was going on in my home life to just some of the, you know, new challenges, moving to a new school, having new friends, and not really feeling like I had a place. And I was literally probably that was going to be my last class. And we happened to have a new instructor come in, and he came right up to me and said, "Go put your pads on. I want to see you spar." So I was sparring, and he's like, you know, giving me all kinds of encouragement, like, "You're really good." And he just grabbed me and he put his arm around me, and he could tell there was some stuff going on, and he drew a little dog on my rib guard, and he goes, "I'm going to call you Mad Dog Macy from now on." And it was one of those pivotal moments, though, that changed it, literally changed my trajectory and kept me going. And that was it. So, you know, I think whether it's a small little thing like that, or it's some huge, you know, you overcome this big test, you thought you were going to fail, or maybe you failed the test and you came back and you went through it. So I think everybody's journey has those little pivotal moments. And that was one of mine.
Yeah. I joke with a couple of our, Miss Walton's one of those. There's very few people who never once on their way to first degree black belt ever have a moment they want to quit. I honestly never did. I never had a moment where I wasn't like pumped to go to class or stoked to get to go teach, or, you know, just in there as often as I could. I really, truly never did. There's a few of those that I've known. I do truly think those of us that have bigger struggles to overcome learn more along the way. My bigger struggles, I think, happen more as an adult going towards, I think probably my fourth degree test was one of the hardest ones for me. And going through, I had my two daughters in between my third degree and my fourth degree. I had started a different business and I was coming back to martial arts. So there were some struggles. Again, you know, personally, it wasn't with something necessarily on the mats, but my struggles were off of the mats in my personal life and being able to overcome those. And martial arts, through everything I've gone through in my life, has been an outlet for that and a resource of growth and constant improvement that kind of carried me through anything else I might have been going through in life.
I'm sure you both recognize how much parents and people appreciate what you do. I mean, if there weren't Ripple Effect schools, the Middleburg schools, karate schools, we wouldn't have a place to train, and we wouldn't have a place to bring our kids to learn these things. And so to host that, and I know that you both have a huge involvement in the community and a belief in community building through the martial arts. Can you talk a little bit about that? What do you want to see the martial arts schools provide to the community?
Well, I think the name itself, Ripple Effect, what kind of speaks to that. And that's actually when I was trying to think of a name for the schools, I was sitting at lunch with my sister and I was describing exactly what I wanted to, my mission, basically what I was wanting to do. And, you know, it was all focused around changing people's lives one life at a time in the community, not so much like in our karate school, but in the community, being able to have that level of impact and understand exactly how I was going to do that. But I knew that was the mission. And she goes, oh, it's kind of like a ripple effect. Part of our black belt test in the schools is that they have to do a community service project. And that community service project takes a lot of time, a lot of preparation for. Some of our kids prepare for 2 years to do that project. And in that process, they're constantly aware of what can I do? Because they're thinking of, I know I got this project to do. And so they're just, that act of awareness itself is impacting the community because they're thinking of the other people rather than themselves. They're thinking of what can my project be on? And they're looking for those opportunities. They're like, well, I see this. And, you know, our daughter is actually in the process of going through that motion right now for preparing for black belt. And she, you know, thinking about our community service project. And so to see that creativity, even in our own household, of her going, okay, we're going to do something that's going to help babies. And what can we do to help, you know, moms or babies out there? And so she's brainstorming these ideas right now. So, you know, the impact itself, like we're making those impacts in the community in a lot of different ways, whether it's, you know, fundraising for different charities to actually having all of our black belts. I mean, now we've probably graduated on in the neighborhood of 600-700 black belts. And for each of these black belts, they've done a huge project in the community. And they've impacted the community in a big way. So when you think about that, that's 600 or 700 huge impacts that we've had just in the community right there. And so that really truly is the ripple effect. You know, it starts from that one person and spreads out throughout. And hopefully those organizations and things that they've made an impact on will then also be able to make other impacts and ripple on even further.
And that, I think, was one of the things that led us to bring the schools together, because, you know, obviously we have the schools in different states. Our mission statements were, you know, written in different phrasing, but stating the exact same thing. And our goals and our values and our company values and our team values, and as martial artists, our values were all so in line that it made it an easy decision. And I think, you know, everything that you just said is something that's very true for us as parents as well. Our goal for our kids is obviously for them to grow up and be happy and to be successful in whatever that looks like for them. But also just as important is to, you know, raise contributing members of society who are making our world a better place. And I think we all want that. We're trying to do the same thing in the karate schools as well.
Thank you for listening to the Ripple Effect Martial Arts Podcast. Find podcasts and more at RippleEffectMartialArts.com.